and economics, the mode, and inevitably, is conflict. Politics is winning over somebody else. And economics is, again, winning over somebody else. And I think it's a good thing to have fight, you know, and to be in the world struggle. That's what life is. But it's in the spiritual realm that there are these constants. It's a shame that typically there has been a fight in the spiritual realm also, namely our religion is the true one and these other people are pagans or infidels or whatnot. And you get the political accent there as well. But in this comparative approach that I've been speaking of, one recognizes the constants and that you are in counterplay in your political and economic life with one of your own kind, not something alien. And you can regard the person as a thou, you know, as you would in a tennis game, the person on the other side of the net. It's not as though you were fighting a monster. And the old political style is to turn the man on the other side of the net into a monster. Every war we've done that, you know. But to know that this is a thou as well, a human being with the same sentiments and potentialities as yourself, at least civilizes the game. And then in other relationships, social and otherwise, there's a possibility of a real sense of accord and commonality, which I think is very, very important in this world. I think the airplane since World War II, which has brought the whole planet into just one travel field, you might say, in 2 days you can be anywhere on the map. And we've got among us, consequently, people such as when I was a young man, one never even saw people from parts of the world that were just fabulous distant places for romance. Here they are, and meeting them in a deep way, not a sentimental way, becoming united with them, I think, is of tremendous importance today. Because the thing that's before us is the problem of what is our social group. Our social group is mankind now. Formerly, it was this group, that, and the other. And always in the older traditions, love was for the in-group, you know, and aggression and all that outward. Now there is no out-group, so what are we going to do with the aggression? It has to be civilized.
Certainly one of the situations we have in our current life is the aspect of technology and how important technology is. And I know that you've dealt in your writings and in your lectures with the ancient conflict between science and religion. And you have stated that that's really a conflict between 4000 BC and 2000 AD, two sciences fighting, one older than the other.
Yes.
I'm wondering how you see that now relative to that battle between religion and science. Do you see it coming together? Do you see a synthesis happening?
Well, my basic position is that as a result of the fact that our tradition has been rendered in scripture, you know, and all of our institutional religions are based on this scripture, and the scripture dates from 2,000 or more years ago, that we have become fixed to a view of the world that is out of accord with what we now are experiencing in the way of the world. When you consider that 1543, when Copernicus published his heliocentric system, this could not be assimilated by the religious teachers of the time. The story of Galileo's trial is well known, and that wasn't the only one. And then when Darwin brings out in the middle of the 19th century what was already a rather old theory, Goethe has it and others, of the evolution of life, it was contrary to the idea of fixed species and again this thing. Well, the science that has been held against modern science is an archaic one. The science, as you say, of about 2000 BC against that of 2000 AD. But the religious mood, the mood of the recognition of the mystery of the universe that lies behind all these images, any image can become an icon, a revelation of this dimension which is transcendent of the science and yet informs it. And it seems to me it's the work of poets, artists, to bring that out, to know what the world image of today is, and to render it as the old seers did and the old prophets, render it as a manifestation of this transcendent principle. That's what we lack today, really. I think poets and artists who really speak of the mystery. There's been so much social criticism in our arts, you know, and satire and all of that, which is just one degree, even this side of the positivism of science, that the other function of the poet of opening the mystery dimension has been, except for certain really great exceptions, forgotten. I think that what we lack really isn't science, but poets and people to reveal to the heart what the heart is ready to recognize, namely this mystery.
We don't seem to do that very much in our culture.
Well, it's the worst here in the United States. When you go to France, there are streets named after their poets. We have them named after generals and things like that. This is a curious thing about our country. When you think of Melville, Mark Twain, Emerson, and go to the places where those men lived, there's no recognition of their having been there in street names or place names or anything of the kind. You've got the mayor of the city, perhaps, on five or six different street corners, but not the poets and artists.
What does that reflect?
It reflects, I think, a businessman's mentality. That's what's running and has run and has made this country. It's a curiously unartistic country in its common character. And yet it has produced some of the really greatest artists of the century. And they're not recognized publicly. Those that are recognized publicly are the razzle-dazzlers that come across in the popular media, you
like
know.
Hollywood.
Yeah, that sort of thing. People fatuously falling on their faces before some marvelous movie actor or something like that. But the poet, the artist. And it isn't as though we didn't have poets and artists. I think, for instance, in California, Robinson Jeffers is one of the really great poets of the century. And when I mention him, and I frequently do, because particularly that Roan Stallion to me was a revelation, people don't even know his name. But when they read the lines that I cite, they recognize a poet. It's curious.
Joseph, in a book entitled Myths to Live By, you wrote, "What we all today surely recognize is that we're entering one way or another a new age requiring a new wisdom. Such a wisdom, furthermore, as belongs rather to experienced old age than to poetically fantasizing youth, and which every one of us, whether young or old, has now somehow to assimilate. Moreover, when we turn our thoughts to religion, the first and most obvious fact is that every one of the great traditions is today in profound disorder. What have been taught as their basic truths seem no longer to hold." End of quote. And I also want to quote a recent Gallup survey, I think, which showed that there was a turning away from institutionalized religion, and yet there is a tremendous upsurge in the search for the ultimate. Could you go into that in a little more depth?
There's an analogy to the present situation in the history of our American Indians in the 19th century. The 70s and 80s of the last century, the buffalo were wiped out, so that the wheat fields of the advancing white man could go out into what had formerly been the buffalo country. And so that the iron horse, the railroad train, wouldn't be interrupted by millions of buffalo. And also so that the food supply of the Indians would be removed and they'd have to go into the reservations and accept the handouts of the United States government. As a result of that, the essential social religion, social cult, which was centered on the buffalo. The buffalo was the animal master and was the principal sacrificial victim, the animal that was the food supply, killed, returned to the earth in ceremonies so that it could return again. This animal was gone, and the old religion of the buffalo was gone. And that wonderful book of Black Elk Speaks, I mean, part of his vision was the end of the buffalo age and the coming of the tree, you might say, the agricultural time. It was when the social religion dissolved that way, and the object of the